This week, Maine lawmakers have been taking up the nominations of Governor Janet Mills' cabinet appointments. And so far, 9 of them have received smooth sailing and been confirmed by the Senate. But one nominee in particular generated opposition from the Penobscot Indian Nation and the tribe's supporters, and that's Jerry Reed, the governor's choice to head the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. Steve Missler, why was the choice of Reed so controversial? Refresh us on the background of this appointment.
Sure. So Reed comes to DEP by way of the Attorney General's office, and the Attorney General's office has been responsible for litigating legal disputes between the Penobscot Nation and the state over water issues and Penobscot River in particular, and, you know, regulatory jurisdiction, trying to resolve those issues. So he has sort of been the face of this litigation, at least in the eyes of the Penobscot Nation, which is vigorously opposed to the state's position. And that also extends to Janet Mills, because she was the attorney general prior to becoming governor. And so from their perspective, at least is the way they've discussed it yesterday, they see Jerry Reed as an inappropriate appointment to that, to the DEP. One, in terms of the fact that, you know, he has pushed to not have sustenance level water quality standards on that river. And also that it just sends the wrong signal at a time when Janet Mills has said that she's trying to repair tribal relations.
Yes, and to that end, she just recently appointed a respected member of the Penobscot Nation to serve as her advisor. And in listening to the confirmation hearing, it did seem like members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee were sympathetic to the concerns raised by tribal members about Jerry Reed and his history with them. But they did go ahead and endorse him unanimously. Is that right?
They did, although you could tell that they... some of them were reluctant to do that. They were seemed perplexed at this choice, even though Jerry Reed, nobody questions his qualifications. Senator Brownie Carson said, just as they were ready to take this unanimous vote yesterday, that he hoped that the governor was listening to the hearing. He was basically saying, I hope that she heard everything that these people said today. Maybe that wasn't a tacit endorsement on his part of everything that they were saying and alleging during the confirmation hearing, but it was certainly, I think, a comment that, you know, I hope that the governor takes notice.
Mel, can this chasm be crossed?
I think that she's the one that's going to set the policy. He's going to execute it as her commissioner. This is not new among governors and members of their own party, where the governor will come forward and nominate someone, and some committee members on one of the standing committees will go, boy, that's really not the best person, but the governor's nominated them, so we will support them. And I think that's what we were hearing yesterday with Jerry Reed, was there were several people on the committee were saying, he's really not the best person in our estimation, but the governor wants him, so she should get her appointment. We have that to a lesser degree among some of the other nominations, where people are going, well, you know, is this person really the best qualified? Well, I might not think so, but because the governor wants this person to be the commissioner of DECD or whatever, then we'll go forward and support them. This is traditional. It's happened with governors going back decades.
And while we're talking about governors, Maine's former governor, Paul LePage, continues to make some high-profile appearances in the media. What's going on there?
I think what you're seeing is the governor does not want to be governor irrelevant. He still wants to have a political role in Maine, even though he's living in Florida now. So he has been involved. He's come on Maine radio talk shows and made some appearances. He was on the Laura Ingraham show on Fox News. But he really seems to be pushing the Trump agenda. I think what we're seeing is an extension of Governor LePage being one of those people who are buying into the effort to make sure that Donald Trump has no primary opposition. Because the reality is, there's a possibility when you go on a state-by-state basis, he could lose some, and that would be embarrassing to a sitting president.
And Steve Missler, you have said that there are some signs that the Maine GOP is doubling down on Trump as their choice for 2020. How so? What are the signs?
Yeah, so there was actually a story in the New York Times last week. It was a little tiny tidbit. It was actually brought to my attention by Erwin Gratz, our colleague, who noticed this one line where a Trump campaign advisor named Bill Stepien had been making these trips to various states to basically guard against what Mal just described, which is the idea that there would be a primary challenge. This is happening in New Hampshire, which is obviously the first primary in the nation, where they were actually trying to get the Republican Party there to draft a resolution that effectively endorses Trump, which would be a statement to potential challengers that they have a tough road ahead of them if they're ever to challenge him. Bill Stepien, that same person, also came to Maine, and he did it just before the party's leadership elections, which, as we've reported and we've seen elsewhere, were very divisive. They were divisive because the party basically took a vote in reelecting its chair and then selecting a new vice chairman, and Nick Isgrow, this very controversial mayor from Waterville, that effectively doubles down on Trump and Governor LePage. And so I think when we see LePage calling in poolside from Florida to various conservative talk show programs or appearing on Fox News, he's effectively a snowbird surrogate for Trump. And I think that that's all by design. You know, you could just look to other states and, of course, Maine for evidence of that.
This attempt to try to head off opposition in the primaries may not be as successful as the Trump people would like. I mean, I was just reading this morning that Bill Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, is thinking about mounting a challenge. So you're going to see, if he does do that, then, you know, he probably would take Massachusetts and play well in New Hampshire.
What about Senator Susan Collins? She was in an interview this week also weighing in on the primary idea, but not necessarily towing the line of the GOP, it would seem.
Basically, what she said was, I'm focusing on my own reelection campaign, which, you know, seems to toss out any ambiguity about whether or not she's running again in 2020, at least in my mind, as does the fact that she hauled in almost $2 million in the last quarter, and according to campaign finance reports. That's not somebody who's looking to step out and not seek reelection. That's somebody who's gearing up for it. But it does illustrate that central tension within not just the Maine Republican Party, but the national Republican Party, which is, how closely do Republicans that are running in 2020, how closely do they want to align themselves with a president who's very unpopular, to the point that a third of GOP-leaning independents, according to a Washington Post ABC News poll, would prefer somebody other than Trump to run in 2020. So I think Collins, who tries to align herself with those GOP-leaning independents and, of course, hardcore GOPers, sees that and understands that and is probably going to have a lot more statements saying that she's not ready to endorse Trump, or she's just going to try to just steer clear of that name altogether unless it becomes necessary for her to do so.
You know, let's look at this historically, because if you go back, whenever we've had an incumbent president, they've always tried to discourage primary opposition. I mean, they just want to go and roll into that second term. They don't want to have to fight a primary battle. So this really isn't all that different from what we saw when, for example, Lyndon Johnson was going to seek re-election before he dropped out of that race. And the list goes on.
It happens, especially when you have a very unpopular president, which is what Trump is. I mean, I can't think of a time when his favorability crested higher than it did than when he took office in 2017. And I think after that, it's kind of taken a nosedive and occasionally come up. And every time that happens, every time it stays low, he risks a primary challenge or somebody who at least entertains the idea.
One final thing I want to ask you about is the appointment this week of Congresswoman Shelley Pingree to a subcommittee on the Interior, which will be dealing with climate change. Steve Missler, tell us about that. What does that signify?
Well, I think it signifies things that she's been messaging pretty heavily in the last, say, several months. She was one of the first veteran members of Congress to sign on to the Green New Deal proposal, which has been this not entirely a new proposal, but it has a new package, I think. And it's been embraced by, you know, this Democratic superstar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I have also noticed that Pingree has sort of partnered with Cortez on several other measures, which is really interesting when you think about it, because you have a veteran member of Congress in Pingree, who also sits on the Appropriations Committee, which is the most powerful committee, arguably, in Congress, partnering with a freshman legislator who has this, like, this brand that's just exploded. I mean, she
has star power.
Star power. Yeah. She has star power, where Pingree has actual power. And so, you know, the two of them coming together signals a couple of things to me. One is that climate change is going to be a priority for this Congress. You've seen climate change being a priority even here in Maine in the Mills administration. What it can actually do in Congress is another story, of course, because the Republicans control the Senate.
But one of the things that this kind of misses that we don't stress enough is the importance of those committee assignments. Shelley Pingree and Susan Collins both sat on their respective appropriations committees that write the budget. I mean, these are extremely powerful committees. They are in extremely powerful positions in terms of actually getting a piece of legislation through and added to the budget, something that most rank-and-file members of Congress have great difficulty doing. So this appointment on the Interior Subcommittee is very important for a whole range of bills, as is her work on other parts of the appropriations dealing with agriculture.
So the State of the Union is coming up. And as we know, the president gives an address and there's a response from various, from the Democrats, et cetera. And also individual members of Congress invite people to that address. Well, Shelley Pingree has invited Joel Clement to be her guest. And he's the, if you recall, the whistleblower at the Interior Department who blew the whistle under the Trump administration for burying climate science studies, et cetera. So that's Joel Clement will be Pingree's guest at the State of the Union.
Steve Missler and Mel Leary, thanks so much.